Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we now conclude our March series on sleep with Alice Park, Time Magazine staff writer who covers health and medicine. She has joined me each Thursday in March to talk about what we're learning from medical science about sleep, why we can't seem to get enough, and what to do about it. Today we'll wrap things up, yes, it is that close to April, with a focus on how too little or even too much sleep affects our health. And it goes beyond foggy thinking. Welcome back to the show, Alice Park.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And listeners, do you have a question about sleep and health? Have you done shift work and seen changes in your health from changing when you sleep? And since this is the last in our five-part series, we will take any leftover questions about sleep research or any leftover tips. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Problems, solutions, and questions about sleep science. 212-433-9692. And Alice, this has been such a great series. It's been one of the most popular things on our website all month. And you recently wrote about a study that showed how too little sleep may lead to weight gain. It's a little more roundabout than just your body hoards fat when you're sleep deprived, right?
Right. So if you think about sleep, it's really the time when both the body and the brain need to rest and recoup and restore. So physically, what happens is your body kind of readjusts to everything that's happened during the day. And there are changes in hormones. There's changes in enzymes. And these all affect how well we process glucose and how much of that glucose and the calories we've taken in get stored into fat. And any disruptions in sleep, if we're not sleeping enough, tends to throw this system out of whack, because if you're not sleeping enough, it's really seen by your body as a stress to the system. So, for example, for folks who don't get enough sleep, cortisol levels, and this is the stress hormone, tends to go up. And that sort of has trickle-down effects on other hormones that affect your appetite, how much you eat, and also how efficiently your body processes glucose.
The study didn't follow the participants to see that eating the extra calories led to weight gain, but doctors have seen this link between sleep deprivation and obesity.
They've looked at studies where retrospectively, so they'll go back and ask people about their sleep habits over a period of time, and they will correlate that with their weight. And they have found consistently that people who report sleep disruptions or who sleep less, generally it's folks who sleep about 6 hours or less a night on a regular basis, tend to be heavier than those who don't.
Let's take a phone call from Neil in Cold Spring Harbor. Neil, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes. I just am curious, has the researchers really nailed it down, whether or not the sleeping is the chicken or the egg? You know, is it the sleeping that causes the problems, or is it other things that could be causing the sleep deprivation?
Yeah, it's a great question. Like the study that depression has been linked to missing sleep, and yet you hear it the other way around. Sleeping too much is a symptom of depression.
That's right. And sleeping too much also is a symptom of heart disease. And so studies have shown that people who sleep, for example, more than 9 hours a night on a regular basis tend to have more angina and heart disease. And there, they think that the issue might be because it's actually a symptom of the heart disease. But it's a great question about sort of the chicken or the egg. And in many of these studies, they're starting to tease apart and get better at removing some of those confounders, and they do believe that there's stronger and stronger evidence showing that it's actually the lack of sleep and the changes that they can document in some of these hormones and enzymes that can contribute to obesity and weight gain.
Joe and Teaneck, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Love the show.
Thank you.
So first, I just wanted to say that at one point in my life, I found it no problem to completely flip my schedule. I was a musician, but of course I had a day job, but my day job was a night job that started at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. So I'd get up and have breakfast at 6 o'clock in the evening and go and do a musical job or rehearsal and then go to my night job, day job, at 3 in the morning and load trucks and so forth until, went home until 11, in the morning and went to sleep, and absolutely no problem to flip. But my question was, why do people need less sleep as they get older? I find that now I need, 30% less sleep than I did back then.
And we touched on this a little bit last week on the question of age and sleep. And so on that point first, Alice, does the science back up that a certain percentage of the population just needs less sleep as they get older to function well?
Well, the amount of sleep each person needs obviously varies. But what these studies do is they try to look at the average. But certainly different people can subsist on different amounts of sleep. I'm, again, one of those people like your caller who doesn't need that much sleep. But, I don't know if there are effects in my performance of that lack of sleep. But there are people who feel that they can function pretty well with less sleep. It really varies among people. And the reason for changes as we age really has to do with, most researchers believe, the increase in sort of chronic diseases that we see in people as we age, which tend to keep us up and disrupt our sleep at night.
There's one study, maybe you know of it, that found people thought they had adjusted to getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep at night, but that when tested, they were mistaken. Their cognitive functions were worse than other people.
And that's why I said why people feel like they get enough sleep, because there does seem to be a disconnect between how people feel and they think that they're getting enough sleep and that they're functioning pretty well. And when they actually do studies on folks in a lab and look at their performance on cognitive tasks and on skill tasks, they do see a decline in their performance among folks who are sleeping less. So the way you feel about how much sleep you're getting and how well you're performing may be very different from sort of objective tests of that.
Ariana in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ariana.
Hi. I was just wondering, because my boyfriend works the graveyard shifts on Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. And when he comes home, he works from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. those nights. And then on Mondays, he goes straight to class from his graveyard shift. So he doesn't usually even sleep at all on Monday nights. So, and he's actually a bit heavier than he should be. And I just heard you say that. And on top of that, he has thyroid issues. And I just heard you say that people who sleep less tend to weigh more. So how would he sort of regulate that? Because even on those days, he gets home around 8 a.m. and then he sleeps until about 2 p.m.
Alice, what do they know about that? What can he do?
Well, I'm not sure about what you can do. You could certainly talk to your doctor about whether there are other ways that other things that he can address as far as his weight is concerned. But there are studies that show that disruptive sleep like that or night shift like that can contribute to obesity because it does change your body cycle. So what's happening is normally when you sleep, hormones such as leptin, which control your appetite, are supposed to go up, and they actually insufficient sleep actually makes them go down. So it makes you hungrier when you're awake. And another hormone, ghrelin, that stimulates appetite also increases so that it makes you hungrier. So these changes are sort of beyond his control if it's if his shift work is changing his night and wake cycle. But if he's concerned about the way that that's affecting his weight, he should definitely talk to his doctor about other things that he can address, to address his weight.
Ariana, thank you and good luck. I used to work an overnight shift and I used to kind of eat my way through it. And I thought it was because I was bored, but now you're telling me it may have been metabolic.
There's increasing evidence that there is a biological change that occurs in your body that changes your appetite, and it also changes the way your body processes glucose. So the calories that you are taking in, your body is less efficient at processing them, breaking them down, and tends to put them into fat more. So there are definitely biological changes that occur with changing your wake and sleep cycle.
Alice Park, Time Magazine health and science writer, concluding our weekly series this month of March with her on sleep. And Alejandro in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show.
Thank you.
My question is, I've noticed within my family that, some of our members of the family have an ability, including myself, to sort of work on little sleep. and other people just seem to require, you know, 10 plus hours. And I was wondering whether there's any studies who have found any links between genetics and ability to function on little sleep.
Alice?
That's a good question. Not sure if there's any studies that actually point to specific genes. It's likely that there are multiple genetic factors that go into what establishes your own sleep-wake cycle. And these genes probably have a lot to do with the genes that also contribute to things like heart disease, the way you respond to stress, the way your immune system responds, and also the way you're set up for your propensity for diabetes. So I wouldn't be surprised if these are the sort of genes that ultimately get tied into how much you sleep, because these are all factors that affect how much we feel like we need to sleep and how much our bodies need in order to feel rested and restored.
Pete in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Brian. It's nice to get on the line with you. I just have a great strategy for getting to sleep if you can't do it. What I try to do is I try to think of someone famous whose name, first name starts with an A and last name starts with a B, say Aaron Burr, for example. Then once I come up with that, I move on to B and C. So let's say Bill Cosby. And my only rule is that I can't use somebody I've already used. So in a few nights, you're on to Bert Convy or whatever. And
That sounds like it would take a lot of focus and keep me awake.
Well, it does, but it's like doing a crossword. Your brain gets tired, and because that's what keeps me up is my brain, my thoughts, mm-hmm. you know. Wandering right. and into this and that.
So you focus on that. Interesting. And I think Marilyn in Manhattan does a similar thing. Marilyn?
Yes, I do. Hi. I had discovered that going down the alphabet by using any category, you can use flowers, dogs, great cities of the world, crummy cities of New York, of America, whatever it is, and you go down the alphabet and think of one or sometimes two or three for each letter. But as you do that, if something doesn't work, you just kind of let it go, and you may come back to it later. But I had a friend who tried it, and she was the only one it didn't work for, and she was being too compulsive about it. She'd say, oh, no, I start really thinking, trying to think of something. So you have to let it go and then come back. And I think what happens is you get in a kind of meditative state. And what I found is I get to maybe G, sometimes now I fall asleep by B, but it really, really works for getting back to sleep. And I've always had trouble if I wake up during the night going back to sleep, and it works, and I've had other people use it too, and it's worked for them.
That's great. Did you say crummy cities of America?
But anything, you know, any category that you think you can think of. I was using that as a kind of joke.
If people didn't already know you lived in Manhattan because I said it, then they would know that you live in Manhattan. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Are those among the most common kinds of tips, if we're looking past medication for the moment, Alice, that
it's
people come up with?
Yeah, it seems like a variation of the counting sheep, right? I mean, that takes a little bit of concentration too. But what's interesting is that the common denominator, I think, among all of those things is, as the last caller just mentioned, the sort of meditative aspect of it, the repetitive nature of it. And what ultimately you want to do is to close out all of the distractions in your brain, you know, the things that happened at work today, what your kids did, what you have to do tomorrow, the deadlines you're up against. So the key goal is to sort of clear your mind of all of that. And I think all of these practices are good at doing that. So whatever works for you, as long as it's something that helps you to focus and it keeps your mind sort of on a repetitive cycle that eventually it falls asleep, whatever works.
Coming up on tomorrow's show, the crummy cities of America from A to G, if you can stay awake that long. Antonios in Queens, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I had heard, and it may be hearsay, that sleep deprivation is potentially cumulative. I'll give you an example. I have a friend of mine who did a very long commute for several months in a row, and he was only sleeping, say, 4 or 5 hours a night for weeks on end. Well, that job finally came to an end. Now he's sleeping a regular night's sleep every night, getting adequate sleep. that loss that he acquired over the several months where he was not sleeping, does his body still suffer the deleterious effects of that, or has he now recovered because he's gotten a few good nights of sleep?
Great question. Alice, does science know the answer?
It is a great question. And what we do know is that in the shorter term studies of people in sleep clinics who come in and who are intentionally given disturbed sleep, so they're forced to sleep only 4 hours or 6 hours a night, these folks, you cannot make up for it on the weekend. So again, you know, researchers say that if you're sleep deprived because you've got a deadline coming up at work and you're not sleeping well during the week, it doesn't really make up for it by sleeping five hours more or 4 hours more on Saturday and Sunday. Eventually, your body will refine its rhythm, but how long it takes, I think, varies individually. So whether or not the person you're talking about is now back to normal, I think it just depends. And he'll probably know whether he feels sort of alert when he wakes up and rested when he wakes up. But it's not immediate. So you can't assume if you've been sleeping less during the week, for example, that sleeping a little more on the weekend will make you fresh that next Monday.
So
it does take some time.
In our last 20 seconds, a follow-up, how can you tell if you're one of the lucky 5% who don't need 7 to 8 hours of sleep? Is it just based on how you feel?
I think you do have to trust your body to a certain point. And I don't know about other folks, but for me, there is a certain point at which I can't lie in bed. You know, I feel like I have to get up and I feel like I've had enough sleep. So I think at some point you have to trust your body, and your body will tell you when it's had enough rest and you're ready for the day and you feel rested. I think that's the key for most people, is you have to feel rested once you wake up in the morning. And that's when you know you've had enough sleep and that you're getting enough sleep.
And if you're falling asleep behind the wheel, that's a bad indicator of whether you're getting enough. Alice Park, health and medicine reporter for Time Magazine. This has been such a great series on sleep. We'll keep the whole series up on our website. People can listen to the various parts. People have really appreciated this, Alice. Thank you so much.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.